Okay, so here we go. We're going to talk about the 9 days and Tisha B'Av as we're in this Tikkufa. It's one of those time periods where we always have this, like, I don't know, I always have this, like, sense of kind of, like, brittling Jewish guilt that, like, we really need to learn something every single year about this time of year. You know, El Zaman also, definitely. I think, like, the older I get, the more I could admit that, like, I love this time of year. I don't know. I love... Hey, Javi! Nice haircut. Hi, Javi. Nice haircut. But I just love this time of year. I don't know. I love the, like, the of moving into Elul. It's just like gishmak for my dark soul. Okay. Ready? So we're going to learn a little bit, and it's going to be super fun, I think. Okay? So I'm going to share a source sheet. I'm going to share my screen. Here we go. Okay? Anything that we learn about this time of year... What? Anything that we learn about this time of year has to be... framed by these two Gemaras over here. Okay, number one, number two on the source sheet. So, Shalu was Rabbi Eliezer. They asked Rabbi Eliezer, "Doros ha'achronim kasherim min ha'rishonim? Are we so much better than them? Like, let's call a spade a spade. They lived through Chorban Bayis. They had these like lightning bolts being thrown at them from the heavens, and we're like in our comfortable houses, like fasting and watching videos. You know what I mean? And like drinking Gatorade beforehand. So like, are we better than them? So what's the answer to that? You guys can give me like a thumbs up or a thumbs down." We all know the answer to that is no, right? And we know it from a very explicit Gemara. Hold on a second. I'm going to hide my selfie so I can see all you guys at once. Awesome. Okay, which says this. Amru, they say, Kol dor she'eino nivne b'yamav ma'alin alav ke'ilu hachrivo. Every generation that it isn't built in his time, in their time, it's as if they destroyed it. So on a scale of 1 to intense, this is a pretty intense phrase for Chazal to say, right? Like that's pretty intense. Any generation that it's not rebuilt, it's as if it was destroyed. Like, whoa, okay? And obviously the point of this is not to scare us. The point of this is to make what? What's the point of this kind of statement? Are we in a listening mood tonight, guys? Yeah. It's okay if you are. Exactly, Eliana.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's to make us feel like, again, the severity of it, but also a certain amount of personal relevance, right? That's what it's saying to us. Like, you're not commemorating something that happened in the past. You're commemorating something that is somehow relevant to you nowadays, as if you lived back then when it all happened, right? That's kind of like the frame. And again, we always have this second one, which is that we know why it was destroyed, and that's where we have to look in ourselves, right? Mikdos rishon mipnei macharav mipnei shlosha dvarim shahayu bo. Avodah zarah gila ra'os v'shvichas damim. Aval mikdash sheni mipnei macharav mipnei shahayse bo sinas chinam. L'medcha sheshkula sinas chinam kineged shlosha averos. Avodah zarah gila ra'os v'shvichas damim. Right? It's a shocking and surprising statement. The first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of the three cardinal sins, which is, by the way, if you had to guess exactly the kind of thing that you would guess a Beis HaMikdash would get destroyed over, is something like that. And the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of this thing called sinas chinam, which, again, we're actually not going to go this route. But if I asked you as a poll, raise of hands, how many of you guys are murderers, adulterers, or idol worshippers? I just asked this to like a bunch of people and nobody said yes. It was really weird. Right? So if we're not culpable for the three cardinal sins, then there's something about the second Beis HaMikdash that is most relevant to us. Okay? And that's where we have to go here, is like what's happening in the second Beis HaMikdash, and that's what we're going to look at. We're going to go look at like the story, basically, of Chorban Bayis Sheni, because, and again, not necessarily going down the Sinas Chinam route, and I'm not going to try to cram them together. If you have any ideas how it works together, I'm all ears. But just going down what happened, what's the story of Chorban Bayis Sheni, and what lessons does it teach us? And again, the frame here is also according to this Rav Hirsch, which is like beautiful, and it's so Hirschian to like put it just so simply like this. It is not mourning, which is the dominant note of our days, of remembrance for the Chorban, right? We're not mourning something that happened in the past, but fasting. And the difference between mourning and fasting, right, is that fasting is searching our hearts in order to find our way back and up. Isn't that beautiful? In order to find our way back and up. Recognizing the causes of our downfall and mustering our energies for completely eliminating them from our midst. Hi, Chana. I must turn off that noise because otherwise it drives me berserk. Hi, Chana. Welcome, welcome. So nice to see you. 1 second. What? Participants. Sorry. Play sound. When someone joins or leaves, please don't do that. Okay. Ready? Here we go. So that's our frame, okay? So I want to talk for a second. I'm going to share my screen again. I want to talk for a second about what is happening at the time of Chorban Bayis Sheni. Okay? Not to be super black and white about it, but let's talk about the story of Bayis Sheni. I actually think this is like some of the most fascinating stories in like all of Jewish history. Okay? Who are the good guys and who are the bad guys? Okay? Let's fill in these charts. So one side says bad guys and one side says good guys. Who can we fill into either of these boxes? What do we know? Let's go, guys. Anybody? Bad guys? Good guys? We all rusty in our Jewish history over here? Anyone? Okay, fine. So what are the categories of bad guys, right? Who was the conquering general who conquered Yerushalayim at the time of Chorban Bayis Sheni? Anyone know his name? Okay, Titus and... Good. Bar Kokhba is actually later. And he was a Jew who claimed to be Messiah and then wasn't. But good. He is just around that time period, just a little bit after Chorban Bayis Sheni. Okay? Titus and Vespasian. There's actually two. Does anyone know why there are two? Again, I'm feeling like this is like we're just not feeling super vocal right now. So I think I'm going to just tell it to you, I guess. And you'll give me like a thumbs down if you don't want me to do that. Okay? The reason that there's Vespasian and Titus here is that they're related to each other. Titus is Vespasian's son. So let's actually put Vespasian first and Titus second. Okay? Vespasian. Okay? Vespasian was the conquering general, fascinatingly, who got elected, basically, to be the one in charge of the war in Judea for one fascinating reason, which was that he was a big fat nobody. Okay, so he was the one who was elected by Nero, who was the emperor at the time, because Vespasian was a nobody. He was basically like a mediocre general, and he's like fighting this like little foreign war, and we're all Americans. We know about these little foreign wars that like nobody really cares about all that much. So that's what the war in Judea started as. But halfway through, why did power transfer to Titus? Because, fascinatingly, when I kept asking this, people were like, because Vespasian died. Okay, he actually didn't die. He became the emperor of Rome. So he started off as a nobody. Nero dies, basically commits suicide because of like a political upheaval. Three other people take over the emperorship of Rome for a very short amount of time and also are murdered or killed themselves. And Vespasian's troops elect him the emperor. So halfway through the 4 years of the Judean campaign, he becomes the emperor of Rome. So now this like little thing that started as this foreign war, that like again is a foreign war that no one really cares about, the stakes halfway through skyrocket, right? All of a sudden, like, if you're the emperor of Rome and you lose, you can't even manage to hold off this, like, tiny little revolt in the middle of nowhere, this, like, little foreign war. You can't even win a foreign war. Like, come on, you lose massive amounts of credibility. So that is, like, the fascinating reason why, partway through the Judean War, the stakes of it shot through the roof. How about you, Feldman? So nice to see you. Welcome. Okay, good. Here's... other people, bad guys, good guys. Anyone knows anybody to add in here? Okay, so let's go through the bad guy side because I guess we started there. Okay, what other categories of bad guys are there in the Chorban Bayis Sheni? Does anyone know? Okay, anyone recognize these guys? Shimon Bar Giora and Yochanan Migush Chalav. Anyone recognize their names? What are they?
I don't recognize their names, but they sound Jewish, which reminds me of the people that were rebelling.
Exactly.
Not rebelling, but going against the Chachamim and making more havoc.
Okay, good. So they were actually fighting each other, right? In Jerusalem. Listen, by the time Titus, who then is basically the conquering general, right? We have like the Arch of Titus, which was built during his victory ceremony a year after he wins the Jewish revolt, basically, in 70 C and the Chorban and the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. He comes, by the time he gets to Judea to conquer it, he comes with 60,000 Roman troops. Okay? So that's pretty bad news for the Jews. So the Jews, aside from just the civilians in Jerusalem, have close to 20,000, if not more, fighting Jewish soldiers, which is not shabby, and they're in the defensive positions, right? They have these massive fortified walls. So that wouldn't be so bad to have 20,000 against 60,000. It's pretty bad, but it's not horrible, except for the fact that the 20,000 Jews are fighting each other. They're not even fighting each other about whether or not to fight the Romans. They all want to fight the Romans. There are other people, like the moderates, who don't want to fight the Romans, and they basically get like knocked out of the game pretty soon on. And Shimon Bar Giora and Yochanan Migush Chalav, the whole time, the 20,000 Jews in Jerusalem are fighting each other as the Romans are coming in to conquer them. So if you're the Romans, and this is exactly what Titus does, and Vespasian, because it happens partway through, right? Vespasian and Titus are both like, guys, you do your thing. Keep killing each other. Thanks for doing our job for us. We're going to conquer the rest of Jerusalem, the rest of Israel, and cut off all aid to Yerushalayim in the meantime. And when you guys are done killing each other, let us know. We'll come in and kill the rest of you. And that is basically exactly what happens. So that's pretty intense. And if you want to talk about Sinas Chinam, you know, here you have it. Who else can we add over here? And we recognize this guy's name, Josephus. Okay, he is fascinating, a fascinating character. He is a Kohen. His name is actually Yosef ben Matisyahu. Okay, he was elected by the Sanhedrin to fight against the Romans when they first started coming down through the Galilee. And he basically loses spectacularly. He ends up like hiding in a cave after losing the battle against the Romans with 20, not 40, I forgot to say, 20 or 40 of his other like kinsmen, convinces all of them to commit suicide. And he walks out, the only one, well, there's one other guy, him and one other guy walk out free. We don't know what happens to the other guy. And he hands himself over to the Romans and becomes their official historian for the rest of the war, which is why we know individual people's names on both sides. It's like the incredible rich history that we have of Bayashani is like unparalleled in the ancient world. And we have it because of Josephus. Okay. And he dies a cushy life in Rome after Chorban Bias. Okay. So we would call this guy a turncoat. He's the most famous Jewish turncoat ever. Okay. He basically is like a, he started on one side and he went over to the other side. Okay. What about this guy? Bar Kokhba. Sorry, not Bar Kokhba. Bar Kamsa. Right? Bar Kamsa. It's a fascinating story if you think about Bar Kamsa. Right? What happens? He has a party. Someone gets invited. He gets invited, but really it should have been this other guy, Kamsa. And the head of the party throws him out. Right? We know the whole thing. And who does Bar Kamsa, and fine, so then Bar Kamsa goes to Rome, basically, and sells out the Jews to the Roman emperor, and convinces the Jews, basically, into, like, a declaration of war against Rome. And that's why the Judean War started. Even according to Josephus, it was, like, the refusal to bring that carbon, okay? So, Bar Kamsa, let's call him a traitor. But in the story of Bar Kamsa, who does he blame? Okay, let's go to the story scene for a second, right? Because of Kamsa, a Kamsa Ubar Kamsa, Chor of Yerushalayim, Chazal say, it was because of them that Yerushalayim was destroyed. Then they tell the whole story of it, right? And when Bar Kamsa is thrown out of the party by this, you know, the Baal, the head of the party, whoever's the host of the party, and the host doesn't have a name. The host doesn't have a name. We don't know his name. But Bar Kamsa doesn't blame the host. He blames, and again, I would never say this, guys, but this is Chazal telling us the story that they want us to know. Okay? Let's see. Okay. Omar, what does he say after he gets thrown out of the party? Omar, Hoil v'heve yisevei Rabbanan v'lo machube. Rabbanan were there. The sages were there and they didn't protest it. Okay. I'm going to basically go and hand them over. It must be that they agreed with it, right? Since they didn't protest it, it must be that they agreed with it. Okay. Since the sages were sitting there and didn't, I'm not even going to try to read the Aramaic. I'm really sorry. You can go on to Safari and maybe find it with the kiddos. Since the sages were sitting there and did not protest the actions of the host, we learned from it that they must have been okay with it. So I'm going to go inform against them, and they do. So not only on this side do we have Bar Kamsa, but we also have who? Rabbanan, who were bystanders. Okay, and not only that, if you look at this source, it's actually fascinating. The end of the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, right? Then he brings the cart, he convinces the Caesar, he says to the Caesar, the Jews are rebelling, I'll prove it to you, send them a carbon for the temptation, and they will bring it. And Caesar says, no, Shalom, they're going to be, and Kamsa's telling you they will. Caesar sends a beautiful carbon with Bar Kamsa to Yerushalayim. And in the meantime, on the way to Yerushalayim, Bar Kamsa, like, makes a moon on it that the Jews consider possible carbon and the Romans don't. So he gets to Yerushalayim, and the sages, those same Rabbanan, it sounds like, who were there at the party and didn't say anything, have this whole heated debate between them of what to do. So they say, well, probably we should bring it. We should bring the carbon, right? We should bring the carbon anyways. But they say, no, we can't. We can't. One sage, whose name, Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulus, okay? He says to them, what do you mean? You can't bring the carbon. Because if you bring the carbon, people are going to think that an animal that has this kind of moon could be brought as a carbon. On principle, we can't do it. So then they say, well, maybe we should kill Bar Kamsa so he doesn't go and report on us to the king, to the emperor. And Rabbi Zachariah again says to them, what do you mean? Then people are going to think that if you try to bring a carbon with a moon, you're allowed to be killed. You're supposed to be killed. People are going to learn completely the wrong lesson. We can't do anything. And because of that, they don't do anything. They're frozen and they remain bystanders. And look how the whole story starts up that Bar Kamsa was destroyed over this story. And in this, it's like insane. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, An vasanu so shall Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulus. This rabbi who froze them. An vasanu so, his anava. And again, we're not going here now, but it's like fascinating. An vasanu so his anna of Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulus hechriva es beisenu v'sarfa es hechalenu v'higli sanu me'artzenu. That's what destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. They heap it on Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulus's shoulders, who it seems to be was being like righteously pious, but too much so. Okay, so it's not only the Rabbanan, but it's also a specific one, also Rabbi Zachariah. Whew! And what about the good guy category? Who's here? Okay, so this is the problem with bias, Shani. If you want to see it, here it is. We have Romans, we have zealots, we have turncoats, traitors, and bystanders, all in the bad guy category. And in the good guy category, we have a big blank slate. This is probably, I think, my only memory of high school history, besides for all the stuff that I'm sure I learned somewhere crammed in there. But I remember learning this time period in high school history. And when we learned that Yochanan Migush Chalav started heading down from the Galilee after they lost the war in the Galilee, he's a warrior and he starts heading down to Jerusalem, I got all excited because I was like, in class, I was like, finally, we have Yehuda Maccabee, right? Finally, we have somebody who's willing to fight this war on behalf of the Jews. Like, now this story is going to shape up, basically. And I remember my teacher, Mrs. Eisenstein. She looked at me and I remember she was like bashful. She was like, Chana, you're cheering for the wrong person. She was like, he's not the hero. And he wasn't. He killed tons of Jews and he starved out other Jews and he killed other, like, it's brutal. It's brutal what these guys did to Jerusalem. Shimon Bar Gera and Yochanan Migush Chalav. But the problem is, she didn't say to me and she couldn't, Chana, Yochanan Migush Chalav isn't the hero. Here's who is. And give me somebody's name. She just said, he's not the hero. And I remember that tension of feeling like, who's the hero here? Who am I rooting for? Okay, this is not completely accurate because there is one redeeming story. There's one little lighthouse in all the stories that Chazal have of Chorban Bayis Sheni, and I think it has the only one good guy. So let's read that. Ready? Here we go back to our source sheet. Again, I think this is like the most fascinating, like, thing ever, okay? Just like fascinating history, it's fascinating chazals. Abba Sikra, Reish Bar Yonah D'Yerushalayim, Barach Hasei D'Rabban Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Okay, so we just got two people. Let's assume they're both going to be good guys, okay? Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai and his nephew Abba Sikra, who certainly starts as a bad guy, because it says that Abba Sikra, he was one of the zealots. He's not Shimon Bar Gera, he's not Yochanan Migush Chalav, but he's in some way one of the leaders of the zealots, okay? So, and he was the nephew of Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Heve shalach le. So Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai sends him a message. It says, Tel Bitzina, come to me secretly. And Abba Sikra comes to him secretly, and he says, Amar le, at emasai ibdisu hachi v'katlisu le la'alma b'kafna. How long are you going to be oppressing the people? He basically says to him, Abba Sikra, you're on the bad guy list. What are you doing to the people of Jerusalem? Why are you oppressing them? Why are you mistreating them? Get with the picture. Get yourself on the good guy chart. Right? What is going on? And Abba Sikra says to him, fascinatingly, Amarle, Maya Avid, what am I supposed to do? Dia mena lihu mi de katluli. If I say to them anything, they're going to kill me too. By the way, does this story sound familiar? Of somebody saying to somebody else, the Jewish people need you. Stand up. And the person says, I can't stand up. They're going to kill me. Right? Mordechai and Esther. Here we have it right here. Right? Blah, blah, blah. You guys all know this. Fine. So he says to him, he says to Hasach, basically, charge her to go to the king and appeal to him. And she says to me, I can't go. I haven't been summoned. And everyone knows he's going to put me to death. And Mordechai basically says back to her, who cares? Who cares? Maybe that's why you're a queen. And she says, you know, you're right. I'm going to do it anyways. And if I die, I die. Abba Sikra didn't have that answer. Rabbi Yochanan probably pushed back on him, and Abba Sikra probably said, no. So what we see in the Gemara in the next line is Yochanan Ben Zakkai going to his plan B, which is fascinating because we don't know what his plan A was, and we don't know what Mordechai's plan B would have been, okay? But he says to them, okay? So Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai says, fine. Amar le, chazi li takanta l'dide l'efok, okay? Please, if you're not going to speak up, if you're not going to fight back, basically, to Shimon Bar Gera and Yochanan Migush Chalav, at least help me find a way out of the city. Efshar deheve hatzalaporta. Maybe there'll be a small salvation. Such a beautiful phrase. Hatzalaporta. A little salvation. Fine. My plan A isn't going to work, but at least maybe I'll get a plan B. help me do something. And Abba Sikr basically says to him, well, I could do that. And they come up with this scheme, which again is fascinating. They hide Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in a coffin. They spread, well, first they spread the rumor that he's sick, which is fascinating. If you know the psychology of the fighting people and the morale of the general populace in Yerushalayim, right? You're being sieged from the inside. You're being fought from the inside by these two zealot factions. From the outside, you have the 60,000 Roman legions marching on Yerushalayim, and the Gadol Hador dies. And the only four people knew that he was alive, Yochanan ben Zakkai, Abba Sikra, and the two students who carry out his coffin, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua. Again, we know their names, they come up, they're like the main characters of the Talmud, basically. Okay, by the way, Rabbi Eliezer, one of them who carries him out, is the one who's quoted over here in source one. Fascinating, right? Oops. Sha'alu was Rabbi Eliezer, that's one of the people who carries out the coffin of Yochanan ben Zakkai. Fine. So they hide him in a coffin. They put a piece of rotting meat next to his door so all his well-wishers go away. They spread the rumor that he's dead. They bring him out in a coffin. A fascinating stuff happens. He goes to Vespasian and basically says to Vespasian, hail king. Vespasian is not yet the king. He's not yet the emperor. They have a back and forth, but Vespasian, in that moment, you know, one of his soldiers come in and tell him that he's been declared emperor of Rome. Vespasian is duly impressed, and again, skipping a bunch of kind of the back and forth of what happens here, but Vespasian is duly impressed and says to him, listen, I'm going to be replaced soon by somebody else, so in the meantime, ask me something, I'll give you something. I'm impressed enough with you, you're impressive enough character, ask me something and I'm willing to give it to you. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai responds with what are possibly the four most surprising words in the Talmud, if you don't know the story already, which we all do. Tein li Yavne v'chachomeha. Give me Yavne. Okay, and two other things. Sheshuddha de Rabban Gamliel, and basically two things that are relevant to two specific people at the time. Tein li Yavne. Yavne is a five-day walk west of Jerusalem that Google mapped it. Okay, it would take you around 5 days to walk there. He asks for Yavne, and he gets it. And basically, he goes to Yavne, starts setting it up as the center of Torah. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua sneak back into Yerushalayim and take out the sages, including Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Tzadok and other sages who want to go. They sneak people out to Yavne, and they're basically protected by the Romans. And they set up Yavne, so by the time Jerusalem falls, they have a center somewhere else already set up for Torah learning. Okay, and here's what happens. In the Gemara, right? If you're reading this, you're like, what did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai just do? Right? You're flabbergasted and a little bit upset. Or a lot of bit upset. And you're like, yo, what was that? What? Tainli Yavne v'chachamah? How about this? Tainli Yerushalayim. What happened to Jerusalem? Right? And it's not only our question. Kari Aleha Rabbi Yosef, v'isima Rabbi Akiva. Okay, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yosef, or Rabbi Akiva. But let's say it was Rabbi Akiva, because that's where we're going here, basically. Rabbi Akiva says, Meishiv v'chacham achar v'datam yisaka, which is a pasuk that basically says, sometimes great people make mistakes. Iba'i lememarle, he should have said to him, L'shav kinuhu hada zimna, to leave us alone this time. Leave us alone. But then it comes and answers with Rav Yochanan and Zakkai's thought process. V'hu savar, and he thought, Dilma kule hai la'avid, v'hata la'purta nami lohave. If he doesn't give me everything and I ask for everything, I might get nothing. And then I won't even get this hata la'purta. This small salvation. Okay, so we have this conflict, right? That years later, Rabbi Akiva criticizes Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Oh my gosh, I have a meeting time. I don't know what happened to my Zoom that now apparently I'm limited. Okay, so guys, we have 9 minutes and 55 seconds left to this chabura, which is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, right, is criticized by Rabbi Akiva, which makes sense because why would Rabbi Akiva being the one who's criticizing Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Because who is Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva is the chronic optimist of the Talmud, right? We have all sorts of stories, like the one right here in Makos, right? That, by the way, these are, again, the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai who snuck him out. Rabbi Akiva is the student of the students who snuck out Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in his coffin, okay? So they're all walking, and they all start crying. They see the Korban Bias or something that reminds them of the Korban Bias. There's a bunch of stories like this, and they start crying, and Rabbi Akiva starts laughing, right? And they say to him, my gosh, why are you laughing? And he says to them, why are you crying? And he's just as surprised that they're crying that they are, that he's laughing. He just looks at the world in a different way than they do, in a very optimistic way. And again, there's a bunch of stories like this, including the story of Rabbi Akiva's death, right? He's killed by the Romans in 135. So a good 65 years after Korban Bias, okay? But he's killed by the Romans anyway, so we're still in power. in this horrible, brutal, torturous fashion. V'haya makabalav olma chushumayim. And he's like happy. He's like saying shema. Right? He's totally fine. Amr lo talmidim, and the talmidim say to him, Rabbeinu, ad kan? That far? Really? So far? Amr lahem. He says to them, again, this kind of thing, like, what are you talking about? What does that mean? What are you even asking me? Kol yomai hizi mitzitayr al pazak zeb, kol nafshecha. Right? My whole life, I wanted to be able to fulfill this mitzvah with kavana, and now that it finally comes to my hands, I shouldn't do that. And he dies. And the last piece, fascinatingly, of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's story is his death. And listen to how different it is. And that's the missing piece of what is fascinating about what we could learn from this chart, good guys and the bad guys. And we only have Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai on there and a kind of hesitant Abba Sikra. Okay, listen to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's death scene. Kishachol Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, nichnesu tamid of Livakro. They come to visit him. Kevin Shara'o osam hischi livkos. He starts to cry. They say to him the same thing. Amr lo tamidav. Ner Yisrael, amud hayimini, patish achazak, mipnei mata bocha. Why are you crying? Amr lahem, he says to them, listen, his answer is fascinating and it teaches us everything we need to know, basically, about this story from Chorban Bias. Here we go, and he dies years later also. So he says, ilu lifnei melech basar v'dam hayu molichinosi. I'm going to read it outside because I don't want to run out of time and I see the little clock ticking down at me. Okay, he basically says to them, listen, if they were leading me before a flesh and blood king who's here today and dead tomorrow, and if he's angry with me, his anger's not eternal, and if he imprisons me, his imprisonation is not internal, and if he kills me, his killing is not even eternal, and I could probably appease him, and if not, then I could bribe him. I would still cry. And now they're leading me before Hashem, who again is none of those things, right? He lives forever. His anger, if he's angry with me, he's going to be angry forever. If he puts me in jail, so to speak, he's going to be in jail forever. If he kills me, he's going to kill me forever. And I can't appease him and I can't bribe him. And I'm not going to cry? V'lo od. Okay, so firstly, what does that teach you, right? Fine. Let's finish it. V'lo od. And not only that. Ella. Sheish lefanai shnei derachim. I see before me, I like have a vision. And before me, I have these two paths. And I don't know which way they're going to lead me down. Acha shel gan eden v'acha shel gehenim. One to heaven and one to hell. V'eini yodea b'ezim uli chanosi. And I don't know which path they're going to take me down. V'lo evcha, and I'm not going to cry. So again, we see that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai dies in distress over the choice he made all the way up here. That he asks for Yavne. He himself dies not being sure if he's on the good guy side of this chart or the bad guy side of this chart. But he had to take responsibility. He knew that. He knew that much. He pulled out Abba Sikra. He had a plan A that didn't work. He had his plan B that he had to work. Again, he had the situation and he had his personality. And we see from his first answer to the question of why he's crying, how practical he is, how practical he is. And we actually see that next, because they say to him this second thing. They have a follow-up question after he says this to them. They say, Rabbeinu Barchenu, before you die, bless us. Amar Lahem, he says to them, Yihi Roson Sheitei Mora Shamayim Aleichem Kemora Basa Radam. May your fear of heaven be as much as your fear of people. And they're like, what? Does not compute. We thought that was going to be a little bit more inspiring. That sounds like, wait, Amru Lo Tamidim, An Kan? That far? Do you recognize this question? Ad Kan? That's the same question that Rabbi Akiva's students asked him. But they mean it in exactly the opposite way. He's dying, being tortured to death, and he's happy to say Shema. And they say to him, Ad Kan? Meaning so much? Right? That much? Really? Like that much kavana? That much whatever it is? Like whatever it is? That much? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students ask him ad kan in exactly the opposite connotation, meaning that's it. And he says to them, halavai, oh you wish. Teidu kisha adam over aveira omer shalo yirani adam. Because when people do an aveira, they say, I hope no one sees me. They don't say, I hope God doesn't see me, because if they did, they just wouldn't do the aveira. So if only you were so down to earth and practical that you actually feared God as much as you'd fear anybody. Right? This is Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and his massive personality strength of absolute practicality. Coupled with unrelenting responsibility to the Jewish people. And that is what lands him as the only person on this side of the chart. Of the good guy. He is the only one who takes the initiative to be the good guy in the entire period of Chorban Bayis Sheni. So if we're talking about Bayis Sheni and what we could do to make up for all of the mess that it was, Our responsibility in Biasheni and all the time is to make sure that we're on this side of the chart, that we're on the good guy side. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai teaches us the main qualifications, which is that we have to use who we are and our personalities and our strengths. And that's why it's Rabbi Akiva who criticizes Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai for not asking for Yerushalayim. Because if it was Rabbi Akiva, he would have asked for Yerushalayim because he's an optimist. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai doesn't, because that's not who he is. That's not who he is. But he has this massive responsibility that he has to do something. And so he asks for Yavne. And what we learn from this, which is beautiful, which is that to be on this side, on the good guy side, you don't have to be sure that what you're doing is right. But you have to do something. The Rabbanan here do nothing. And then Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulus convinces them again to do nothing. And they were unwilling to take any hard stand. And they're on the bad guy side of this list of Churban Bayis Shini. It's fascinating. And again, I would never be able to say that if the Gemara didn't spell it out explicitly. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the only shining light in this time. Because he felt the responsibility and he used who he was to get there, even though he was not certain. And even though our Mesorah is that he saved the Jewish people, in his mind and in his experience, he dies in more pain than Rabbi Akiva, even though Rabbi Akiva is tortured to death. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was never sure that he made the right decision. And we don't have to be either. But it is much more important to make a decision and do something using all the strengths that we have inside of us than to freeze and do nothing. Or to just be generally bad and evil like the rest of these guys on this list. Okay? So we're going to stop here because we have 1 minute and 45 seconds left before my time runs up. What I would do if we were a workshop and we were like all together in Queens, and maybe we'll do that next time I'm there, is like, again, do a little bit of a workshop about our strengths. We've done that over the years, right? But like, if we are going to try to make up for some of that bad guy mess happening, we have to be able to acknowledge our responsibilities in life and who we're responsible for primarily and how we're going to use who we are to show up there. So that's my proposition for the 9 days and for what we're going to be working on. If you want something to work on, and again, it's a great segue into Elozman, figure out who we are and our like superpowers. Rabbi Akiva's optimism, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is not. It's this massive strategic practicality and groundedness and down-to-earthness. And make sure that we're taking responsibility for what we could take responsibility for and showing up for it with our full selves.